I am so excited about tonight because this is one of my all-time favorite things to teach. Not because I'm an expert or trained in teaching it, but because I have been a student of the personalities since I was very young, my young adult life. And I have learned so much, and I don't know that there's anything that has enhanced my relationships as much as understanding personalities. So if this is brand new to you, I'm thrilled for you. If it's not, I hope you will glean some more things. I think we can learn a little bit more every time about ourselves and the people that we live with and work with and have to be in an extended family with and all that kind of thing. And so it'll be a really, really lighthearted and fun night, I trust. The title, as you know, is Putting on the Armor of Light by Understanding Personalities. And I want to refer back just for a quick second to our theme scripture in Romans 13 that talks about putting on the armor of light. And we remember from the very first time we talked about that, we defined that as, or we said that will happen as we do what it says in verse 14, by clothing ourselves with Jesus Christ. And Philippians 2 is the essence of who Jesus is. If we're going to be able to clothe ourselves with him, we have to know what his essence is. Philippians 2 says that we should have the same attitude in us that was in Jesus Christ, who, although he was God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, held on to, be proven, but he took on the form of a servant. And it says in that chapter that he considered others as more important than himself. And you can't consider others as more important than yourself without understanding, without being understanding. And so the purpose of the teaching tonight is to educate ourselves, whether it's for the first time or a little more, on the personalities so that we can love more like Jesus, so that we can accept the differences in one another and accept ourselves for who we are, just like what Courtney shared. We all have experiences like that where we've been judged for an innate quality in us that God gave us for a reason. It's one of the reasons I love to talk about the lion, who is typically a strong-willed kid that drives mommies crazy. And they are wired to lead. They are awesome kids. My lion kid drove me here tonight in the Jeep and was laughing his head off at me as I was teaching him all about and telling him all the stories I was going to tell tonight. And he's like, "You are crazy, Mom." You know, they turn out to be amazing teenagers and adults if they're channeled in the right way, and we don't say that is a bad personality. So the more we can understand about ourselves and our children, our spouses, the people we work with and who gave birth to us and we have to go to holidays with and all that kind of thing, the more we can love like Jesus. So case made, obviously. James Dobson said, "You will not be able to redesign the basic personality with which your child was born." Maybe some of you have already figured that out, or you've tried and you're making yourself crazy. He says, "Some characteristics are genetically programmed and they will always be there." His advice to you and I is to accept, appreciate, and cultivate the personality with which your child was born. That is true of anyone. Maybe you've discovered this with your spouse or someone you work with that you'd rather not or whatever. You can't, there's certain things. I process very quickly. I live with a man who talks slowly and thinks slowly and needs things repeated. And I have had to work so hard to not make that be bad when I want to go, just say it, get to the bottom line. And he wants to say, "Would you slow down? I don't know." You know, he used to do this when we were first married. "Please time out for me." He can't even think as fast as I talk. But making those things be okay is so, so important. Vic King, in his counseling days, has a phrase that I love. He said to me, when I went to him and talked to him about some, you know, kind of a wall Dave and I hit, and said, "You know, how do we work through this, Vic?" And he said, "First of all, Sherilyn, you've got to normalize the differences. In other words, you've got to stop making the differences bad or wrong and let them be okay. Start making them normal." Isn't it amazing how people who raised you so often are opposite of you? At least one of them. And then you go on and you seem to pick a best friend that's the opposite of you. I'm telling you, I am an otter lion, and all my best friends are beaver, golden retrievers. I'm drawn to that kind of personality. They're drawn to me. Then it seems you marry someone who's opposite of you. Then you bear little people, and some of them are like you, and so you clash, or some of them are opposite, so you clash, and they end up being like your spouse, so you clash. Isn't it funny? There must be a purpose here. God is not cruel. He says, you know, if an earthly father knows how to give his children good gifts, he's not trying to play a trick on us. When we prayed back there, I said to the girls, or in my prayer, I said, one of the things, maybe I said, I don't know if I prayed it or said it out loud, whatever. That's an otter who's like, oh, whatever. You know, always happening. I've learned so many things from Dan Nold, but one of the most profound things I think I've learned from him is how he constantly reminds us that God purposes diversity to teach us how to love like Jesus. And we try to kind of get away from, you know, the one who's different or the diverse situation. And so we want to normalize the differences. We found out very early that our children's personalities were different. I want to tell you just one example of how we would get woken up in the morning. Benjamin is our oldest. He is a lion otter. And I'll explain what these mean in great detail. Andy is our youngest, 3 years younger, and he is a golden retriever beaver. Ben, from the time he was very little, this was the part where he was laughing so hard, he would not even come into our bedroom, but at 5 or 5:30 in the morning, he would stand at our door and do this. Mom, I have pancakes right now! Andy, on the other hand, who saw that modeled and still didn't do it, you would not hear him enter the room. You would open your eyes because you would sense someone's there, and his little face would be there, and he'd be patting or rubbing either David or I and say, Mommy, I love you. Really different. Now, as a parent, what we tend to do, much like this teacher, is I told Ben, I'm going to let them decide which one's bad. He cracked up. He goes, oh, I know which one they're going to say is bad. You know, as a parent, according to our own personality, we could decide one of those are bad behavior. It's different. The way the kid was wired. Now, does Ben have to learn to watch his mouth? Oh, let me tell you, to this very day, yes. But it's not wrong, it just needs to be channeled. So we're going to talk, obviously, in the context of by how I've started, in the context of children's personalities, for three reasons. One, because it's helpful as mothers, or if you don't have children yet, you know children, you love children, you work with children. And so we're going to look at it from that standpoint as being a parent or someone who loves children that we work with. It's also because it's a lot more fun to talk about it from the angle of children. And it simplifies the delivery if you focus on one group. So that's kind of the point we're going to the vantage point from which we're going to go. And then obviously it's very easy for us to go ahead and take those basic characteristics from each of the four personalities and transfer them to ourselves, our spouses, people we work with, live with, that kind of thing. Although the labels are different with each expert or each assessment, experts agree that there are basically four personality types that bear certain characteristics that are distinctive to each one of those. And I need to tell you, if I didn't say this already, I'm not sure. Yeah, I did. I'm not an expert. I'm not trained or anything. If Melanie Harding did this from Grace Connection, she's trained in the DISC personality assessment. She's amazing. And if Vic King did it or Jane Butler, they're both trained in Myers-Briggs. And it's pretty incredible. I haven't heard Jane, although I've heard her do other things. But Vic does a really good job. But so even at the end, I may not be able to answer your questions. But like I said, the young girls can go home and Google and figure out the answers to our questions. So most of us are predominantly one of those personalities, but we are subdominantly another. Let me tell you what I mean. Some of you may be familiar with the DISC personality. The lion is the D and the otter is the I. I am an ID or an otter lion. I am predominantly otter. I am subdominantly a lion. And let me tell you what I've learned over the years. I'm a lion when I'm responsible for something. I am not a lion if I'm not responsible. If you see me interact with children, if I'm just greeting them on a Sunday morning or something, I'm pretty otterish. But if I'm teaching that class, you watch the lion come out in me. It's the same way in a working environment. On my teams that I lead, I tend to be a lion. But my teams that I'm a part of, like I'm on a team with Vic, the central ministry team, I'm very much an otter. I'm on a team with the whole staff that Dan and Dan lead. I'm very much an otter. I crack jokes in the middle of it all. But in my meetings, not quite so much. You know what I mean? So think about that as we go through this tonight, because you really are, in fact, I wish I could, maybe someday I will develop a teaching on the blends. The blends of each are then a whole nother thing. And if you Google DISC or Myers-Briggs, you can find just all kinds of information. And Becky Martin, when I did this years ago, ordered some materials for her children, and her children did it and that sort of thing. So kind of fun. Anyway, there are a couple of different assessments and groupings of these different personalities. And I'm just going to explain them really briefly to you and then talk about the animals. There is the DISC. Each one of those letters stand for something. D is domineering, I is influencing, S is steady, and C is conscientious. Then back when I first started studying personalities, some of you would be way too young to remember these names, but Tim LaHaye and Florence Littauer had written books on personalities. And back then they were called choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, and melancholy, okay? Which is bad. And that was a terrible thing to, anyway. Then there's the Myers-Briggs, which Jane could tell you so much more, as could Vic King. They come up with four letters that are either introvert or extrovert. I scored introvert 100% on there. Vic said, I'm not sure I've met too many or 100%. Anyway. The next one is sensing, intuitive, thinking, feeling, judging, perceiving. And then you come out these four letters. I'm an EN, I don't know these very well, FP, and whatever. Then a number of years ago, John Trent and Gary Smalley, along with their wives, Cindy and Norma, wrote this fabulous book. If you have children, I really encourage you to order it, called The Treasure Tree. And that's where the animals come in. They gave the personalities, they made them animal characters. And there really isn't anything to the male-female thing. But one of Jane's grandchildren, who is a lion, and this would make perfect sense for a lion personality, had an aversion to the lion being a male, and she made sense. And then her little sister was a male in the book too. But, you know, in all fairness to the authors, they had to pick, you know, male or female somehow. But anyway, each of the animals in this story, their strengths help them find a piece of a key. And at the end, each of them have one, and these four pieces fit together so they can unlock like this candy land place and go to the treasure tree. And it's a beautiful, my kids used to love to read this and talk about who they were and why they were. But it's a real concentration on our strengths and how we need each other. So it's a great, great read. And that's where I take the animals. I think it's so much fun to... Oh, good point. Good question. What age level? I started reading when probably Andy was kindergarten. But you really could do preschool. The illustrations are delightful. In preschool, I think you'd have to skim some of the, there's a lot of text, so you'd have to, you know, kind of improvise. Yeah, but you could do that. But they really, really, really used to love that. So, for those of you who, I know for some of you this is going to be kind of old hat, but for those of you who are brand new to this, on your second page is a minimized kind of assessment just to help you get an idea. You can either do yourself, maybe you want to do your spouse, maybe a child or someone at work you don't get along with. The directions are on there. This comes from a book that John and Gary wrote called The Two Sides of Love. Great read. And you just, in each square, you circle ones that are true about you most of the time, and then pick the square that's you primarily and write it down at the bottom. So I'm going to give you a minute to do that, and then we'll talk about it. Okay. If you had the most things circled in type one, thank you, that's a lion. If you had the most things circled in type two, that's an otter. Type 3 is the golden retriever, and type C is the beaver. And if anybody would like an e-copy of that little assessment, if you want to use it, I mean, it's far from, you know, when you take the real personality test, it's very involved and shows graphs and who you are innately, who you are environmentally. Melanie can explain all that. Interestingly, environmentally, my D was so much lower. And Melanie, I asked Melanie, and she said, were you not allowed to be a D? I said, oh, no. In my home, in my home and my church, girls weren't supposed to be strong. So I have come into my D over the years and embraced that, and it's been really freeing. It's been a good thing. So anyway, I want to, as we press into each personality, I want to give you an overview as if I were a teacher, and I want to describe these animals as they come into my classroom to give you an idea. This was another part where Ben was just howling. So I'm the teacher, and the lion walks in first. I'm just going to call them all he, okay? He has figured out from the outside of the classroom where the backpacks go, because lions are always large and in charge. So he walks in with his backpack, hangs it up, goes and finds his seat, and immediately goes to the teacher and tells her why he cannot sit in the back row, because he won't be able to hear, he won't be able to see. And then he goes to a kid who sits in the front row, probably a golden retriever, and tells him, I'm sorry, you're going to have to get up and move and go to my seat. And believe me, the golden retriever would do it even though it wasn't his desk. When the teacher begins to ask questions about the classroom rules that, you know, maybe he or she has already gone over or whatever, the lion raises his hand and he just takes a shot at it. He doesn't care. He's very willing to take on a challenge. He'll try anything. He doesn't get embarrassed in front of the class. He is ready there, large and in charge, happy to be the teacher if she or he were to leave the room, okay? Then the otter comes in. The otter walks in backwards, bumps into someone, talking, of course, doesn't have their backpack. When the teacher asks, it's in the hallway. The otter goes out to get their backpack in the hallway, doesn't come back forever because they found someone out there to talk to, or they've dropped it and everything's falling out. They tend to be a little bit disorganized, but they're having a good old time no matter where they are, and they're planning their story when they go in to tell why they're now late coming back in. The otter goes in and begins to think, I've got to sit by my best friend. And so walks up to the teacher, interrupts the teacher, and says, I have to sit by my best friend. Got it all figured out. She can just come over and sit here by me, and just figuring it all out. And no matter what the teacher does, she can't get the otter to shut up or sit down. When the teacher asks a question, the otter does not raise his or her hand. I'm saying her because it's me. Just simply shoots out the answer and doesn't even notice that people think that that wasn't, you know, didn't follow the rules. The golden retriever walks in, of course, with the backpack on their back. That's what you do when you go to school. And stands against the wall waiting for the teacher to greet them or instruct them, and doesn't instruct them and doesn't move until the teacher gets over there. When the teacher gets over there, the golden retriever whispers very quietly, there's a little girl out in the hallway crying. Because the golden retriever is standing there very concerned about the one who is upset. Teacher gets the golden retriever into the room. The golden retriever starts to sit down on their desk, and the lion tells him, you can't sit down there. You got to go back there. And the golden retriever does exactly what they say. The golden retriever wants peace at all costs. Golden retriever does not have a really super, super strong opinion, so they sort of do what they are told. When the teacher begins to ask questions about the classroom rules that have been made very clear, the golden retriever knows the answer. The golden retriever wouldn't dare think of raising their hand and offering their opinion. In walks the beaver. The beaver is clinging to mommy's hand. The beaver will not let go. The beaver has a backpack, and it is full of every school supplies the beaver could possibly need this year, next year, and for all eternity, because they insisted that their mom or dad take them out and get all the school supplies because they want to be prepared. They will never want to be caught unprepared. They go in, they stay with their mom until they find their desk. As soon as they find their desk and they sit down and they know where their backpack goes and they know where their mom's going and when she's going to be back and how they get here and how they get there, and their mom's reassured them a few times and they know where the teacher is, they sit at their desk and they begin to get organized. And if the lion approaches them to tell them to get out of their seat, they are not budging. They probably won't argue back, but they're not budging because, see, the beaver wants to do absolutely everything right. They do not want to be known for doing things the wrong way. There is a right and wrong way to do things. They do exactly what they're told. When the teacher asks questions about the classroom rule, the beaver very, very politely raises their hand, waits, has the correct answer and can tell everybody where they got the answer because they've already read all the rules in the front of the classroom and they've got it all figured out. That's sort of an overview of the animals. Hopefully that's helpful now as we start breaking them down. We're going to start with big lion. Lots and lots and lots of fill in the blank, which you probably do well at listening that way. I don't do as well teaching that way, so I will try to be very intentional. If I skip something, don't be afraid to tell me. The lion personality is an extrovert and task-focused. They are energized by accomplishing. If that means you get your feelings hurt to get the job done, I'm really sorry. The job has to get done. That is very important. That's on their mind all the time. Their nickname is the doer. They do not like to waste time. They work hard. They play hard. They sleep hard. Honestly, they're the ones who take those mega four-hour naps because when they get up at 5 and say, Mom, I want pancakes right now, they don't stop until they fall asleep and, you know, crash. Typically, not always, they are your strong-willed kids. And they are wired the way that they are wired because God has a plan for them very often in leadership. They take charge naturally. They are not trying to be a brat, which they are often accused of. The three D words for the lion from the DISC personality assessment is direct, driven, and dominating. Another one would be daring. They are very unafraid of new situations. I'm kind of going through the ones that are marked for you under characteristics. They love a challenge. They welcome a challenge. That does not bother them. When our two guys started looking at college, well, they didn't look at college at the same time, of course, but when Ben went, our lion went, otter lion, he fearless to spend the night on a college visit. They're both college athletes, and so, you know, you often go and spend the night. And fearless. We got down to, you know, Golden Retriever Beaver. He wasn't about to go spend the night with a stranger in a dorm in a situation he didn't know anything about. Ben, they could have tried to get him to take drugs, and he would have said, nope, that's stupid, I'm not doing it, I'm calling my parents. I mean, just, they have this fortitude that serves them so well, so if you can channel that, I understand, they are totally, completely exhausting to raise, and I tell Benjamin all the time, you were a brat, and you were difficult, but man, I love that kid, if you can channel that energy, and you don't want to get in power struggles with them, I'll tell you why. They will win. They can outlast you. And they will win. I said to David one day, oh my gosh, that kid always has to have the last word. And he calmly looked at me and said, and so do you. And that was the problem. We were both trying to have the last word. And it didn't work very well. They're very serious about what's expected. In fact, they tend to not be silly. Now, lions who have otter, of course, otter's a lot about fun. But silliness, frivolity, that is a waste of time. And they don't, you know, if you work with a D, you kind of think they're a stick in the mud. But they're just very task-focused. They want things done the right way. They are goal-oriented to a fault. They love to have goals and to reach them. As little children, they tend to be tattletalers. We called Ben the moral policeman. But see, in their mind and heart, they are doing absolutely the right thing to tell you that someone is about to do something bad or dangerous or wrong, or because rules are really important to them. In fact, one of their faults is that the world is black and white in their mind. And I said, you know, Ben, it's black and white according to whatever is in that lion's mind. He said, oh, yeah, it's my way. They are very, very much that way. So if you can remember as a child with children who tend to be tattlers, they... if they are a lion personality, they really think they're doing the right thing to warn you and to help this kid not do something stupid or dangerous or hurt somebody else or, you know, that kind of thing. They typically process through goal setting. They see the big picture and like to set goals and go places. Tips for balancing a lion personality. This is written on your handout in the first person, but I'm going to kind of read it as if it were a child. You have to seek God on how to help them temper their strong will. And that is a delicate balance. You don't want to squelch their spirit. My extended family wanted us to smack the crud out of Ben, and we were spankers at our house in an appropriate way. Of course, I don't advocate any kind of abuse, but we had a teaching tool. It was a wooden spoon, and we used it just enough to smack them and say, what you are doing hurts you on the inside. You need to feel the pain on the outside. So we did spank Ben, but my family just wanted me just to beat him, us to beat him all the time, because he just always seemed like he was being naughty. And he was so full of energy. So you have to work a lot. And I could do a whole session on strong-willed kids. And I said to Ben, we got to get a session going, and you come do it with me somehow. But he said, I don't know what I'd say. I guess do what my parents did. But anyway, you really got to pray and read things on strong-willed kids. Talk to other people who had strong-willed kids. Talk to mothers who've raised them, who can say to you, hang in there. These are great kids someday. They are hard to live with when they're young. They are really hard because they want their way. Ben used to get up a lot and say, Mommy, I'll be the boss today. Oh, no, I will be the boss. And we go back and forth. No, and I get louder. Don't do that. It doesn't work because they just get louder. Help them learn to make communication two-way. Lions have this sense that they're right. And they make a lot of sense. They're very logical. And so often, Ben could argue a point that made so much more sense than what we could tell him. But they have a tendency to be the talker and the swayer. And then if your lion has the strength of woo, then they're even more so that way. And they need to learn that it's got to be two-way, and it's very important to listen. They have a much harder time with that. Help them practice, that's the next one, being a better listener. Help them understand that they can come across as if they're trying to control others. They are kind of trying to control others. You have to help them understand that that's not their place to control others. They just need to control themselves. Although they are not naturally compassionate. Now, I don't mean they're not tenderhearted. At least at our house, our lion is probably more tenderhearted than our golden retriever beaver, but not naturally compassionate. And so that's the next one. I didn't make that very clear. Although they are not naturally compassionate, have them work at being sensitive towards others and their feelings. Because of the task-oriented thing, I'm going to get it done. I'm sorry it hurt their feelings. That was stupid. I had to do it, kind of thing. And you have to keep, talking. And having another person who they've hurt their feelings, a sibling or whatever, talk to them. It's important to tell your lion child that, no, that hurt my feelings. You are right in what you're saying, but your delivery hurt my feelings. You can't do that, kind of thing. Boundaries. Help them realize that life is not always black and white, right or wrong. If Ben were standing here, I would say, Ben Jameson, you've got to understand life is not. And he would say, I know it's not fair, Mom. They have this sense of justice, and they want so bad for the balances to balance. Makes them a little crazy. They have a hard time trusting God because they trust themselves, and it works well for them a lot. So that's a little harder for that personality. You want to work on that and pray that through with them. Help them recognize that their high need to feel they have a high need to feel in control, but to work at not being bossy. Our lion had to learn to walk away from the situation, because what we found was if his mouth started, there was no return. No return. So he has learned to completely walk away and then come back and try to discuss things, and that has helped. Help them seek opportunities to let others make the decision. Oh, they want to make every decision, believe me, and they need to let other people do that and live with that, even though they will grumble, believe me. And then humble themselves often before God and before others. So, this is going really slow. It's not going slow, but keep moving. Next page, I think. Parenting a lion. You will need the power of the Holy Spirit to temper their strong will without breaking their spirit. One of the things that I used to say to the Lord, let me look in his eyes and see whatever I need to see. One time, I think I've shared this before, Ben had a verbal altercation, not real bad, but with a substitute, and the school called me. And I knew when I saw him, I would all the time, I'd say, Lord, let me see in his eyes. Let me see in my kid's eyes. And I looked in those eyes and I knew that some, I don't even know how I knew. That's why I say, ask the Holy Spirit. I knew something had made him feel really threatened. And I wasn't blaming the substitute. I was a sub. That is not an easy job at all. And he had to, you know, rectify some things and all that. But I knew I couldn't come down hard and just, you've got to respect the authority, you know, because something in there had clipped in him. And that's why he kind of, and lions will do that. I said, Ben, you know the favorite word of a lion, don't you? When we were driving over here, he said, I'm not sure, Mom. I said, stupid. He goes, oh my gosh, I did say that a lot, didn't I? They're the kid that walks in after school, either the principal's stupid, the assignment is stupid, the teacher's stupid, the kid that sits next to him stupid, the kid on the playground stupid, somebody's stupid. And the rule is stupid. They're just, because they have this sense that they really have got a handle on life. And they've got it figured out. And you know what? They're impulsive decision makers, but very often they are right. They just, they have this very logical head that God gives them. Because to be a good leader, sometimes you have to be impulsive. You have to decide things. Believe me, there's times in Kids Connection they go, you go say it, Charlene, you know, to a really tough situation. And a leader has to be able to do that. And these kids can do that. They also can say when they're in high school and the temptation is on, no, that's wrong. I'm not going to do it. They have a fortitude that serves them well. So parenting a lion, number one, recognize they were born a leader by God's design and for good reason. Kind of made that point over and over. Number two, teach them to listen before they talk. Sometimes. You can't always do it. Don't allow them to control others and situations, particularly siblings. They are notorious for doing that. And sometimes you have siblings that that's okay. Our Andy, that was okay most of the time, but you just got to keep encouraging them to think that through. Number three, understand that they don't mean to be bossy or hurt the feelings of other people. That really is how they're wired. They're not trying to be a brat. They are so direct sometimes that their words feel, I mean, there's times my kid says things to me, I think, you got to be kidding. I can't believe you just said that. But they're just really direct. And it's in their head, it's like, well, it's the truth. That makes sense to me. So you got to keep, you know, working through that and see it from the right perspective. Number four, make your expectations clear and explain why. Lions need to know why. They have this strong sense of needing to be in control. And when you put a why behind the expectation, you will see them become very cooperative. We saw it over and over with our Ben. And remember, I've said a lot of times, now this is middle school and older, say yes as often as you can. So when you have to say no, they realize it's, you know, kind of serious. And if you tell a lion no, and this is why, and it makes, you know, it's a good reason, don't have a stupid reason, because we want to stay home tonight, we don't want to drive you there. That's a stupid reason not to take a teenager, you know, not to let a teenager do something. And they know when it's stupid. And it frustrates them when it's stupid. So tell them why. They're not trying to be disrespectful. They have a need to know. Number five, accept that they're not naturally compassionate by nature, so encourage them to consider other people as being more important than things. But don't enforce that on them, because they're always thinking about a task. At dinner the other night with family, and Ben was getting really anxious, and I said, okay, so what time does the March Madness game start? I could just tell. He was just getting, and he had been really gracious, and going out to dinner is not his favorite thing. He's far more task-focused than people-focused, and so we kind of wrapped it up. You know, give some give and take with that, you know? Number six, let them make some of their own decisions. It makes them feel valuable and significant. Ben's first day of ninth grade, he walked downstairs with an afro that was orange because he had done sun into his hair, cobalt blue shorts and socks that went up under his shorts, and this flaming orange shirt and these really bright, I think, red tennis shoes. And I'm like, going like that today? Yep. You're making a first impression? Yep. You can't even finish with a lion. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I let him go. You got to let him go. The principal came up behind him the first day at lunch and went like this to his hair, Deb Latta, those of you who know her, and said, well, now there's a kid who knows how to be himself. That's the truth. They really have a strong sense to be in control. Their life view is work. Now, not always, you know, I mean, they like, but work, play, whatever they do, it's all for, all out. They want to do everything with everything they have in them. Very productivity oriented, accomplishment. They're a realist. They're not silly. That feels like a waste of time and energy. Affirm your lion a couple of ways, and I'll go through these very quickly. Let them make the decision so they have that sense of being in charge. I finally came to the point with Ben for chores on the weekend. We called it the three B's. My boys had to clean the basement, the bedroom, and their bathroom. They each had a bathroom that they had to clean. And I gave that to Ben on Friday night and said, it's got to be done by Sunday before you go to bed. And took my hands off of it, and that was so freeing. I was arguing all weekend with him. He had the need to figure out when I'm going to do my chores, how I'm going to do my chores, I'm going to do it before I go, but, you know, and often he left at the last minute. Did I really care? No, I just wanted the job done. So let them make the decision. That will affirm them. Recognize their accomplishments and sense of responsibility, and say so. Praise their tasks. I talk to him about relationships, it goes south very fast. It's just not his language. But if I talk about him coming down the end of this stretch in college with his two disabilities and how he's done this and he's done, it goes a long way. Talk about the things they accomplish. Take time to explain things. They have a need for the big picture, the why behind it. That affirms them. Encourage them to take on a new thing because they love a challenge and they can get bored very easily. My boss said to me one time, knowing the lion in me, said, I think you do need to, he was encouraging me to take on something that I thought, I don't think I can add that. He said, I think you really need to. He said, you're just on the edge of getting bored because they get bored very, very easily. They set their goals and they reach them and they got to move on to something else. Believe their first answer. Lions know, they say what they mean and they mean what they say. Beavers and golden retrievers, not so much. Golden retrievers because they don't really have an opinion. Beavers because they don't dare want to be wrong. Otters, I don't know, just having a good time here. See, you can't even see me. You know, I mean, they just, but lions are very intentional and they are frustrated. Ask me how I know. This is part of me that drives me crazy about other personalities. It drives me crazy when my husband that's over here says, well, is that really what you want? Yes, I told you that three times. Are you sure that? Yes! Believe their first answer. That will affirm them. It gives them a sense that you trust them because they trust them. So they want you to. Give them the bottom line first. Details leading up to the bottom line, especially if they're spoken slowly, make them crazy. Okay, moving on. Otter personality. This is our little otter up here with the party hat on, which makes a lot of sense for him or her. An otter is an extrovert and people-focused. An otter is very energized by people and performance. Right, Abby? People and performance. And sometimes we make that bad. We make the performance piece prideful. They're wired to entertain and make you happy. Isn't that in your heart, really? I know she's like an otter off the charts. If you think your funny thing or your little performance, and even it's sometimes very little, just walking in with your story, made someone giggle and laugh and have a good day, you're thrilled as an otter. They really are. Their nickname is the talker, capital T. They are ideal people, very creative. They are often messy and late, but they're always having a good old time. Otters live in the present, and they kind of forget that they had a plan to get to, you know, over here, and someone's waiting on them because they're right here with you, and they're having so much fun, and they're really engaged in you, and they, on the way to the next place, they'll make up their story. And they do exaggerate terribly. They make up their story about why they were late. And it's got an element of truth, but boy, it's really embellished, those otters. They walk in a room with their mouth first. The three eyes from the disc about an otter is influencing, interactive, and inspiring. They are kind of the life of the party without effort. They really have a high need to be liked by all, and so they tend to be attention-seeking. That can be okay, that can be detrimental for them. They're flexible, aware of others. They kind of love a crowd. Love a crowd. It used to be so hard for me to teach the elementary group at the table because there's never more than maybe 12. But you give me 45 kids on a Sunday morning by myself and I'm happy. They just love a crowd. I guess it feels like an audience. I don't know. But there's just something about a lot of people that is very, very energizing to them. The more, the merrier. They're typically very optimistic. They see the good in everyone, but they very often are not a good judge of character. They see the good in everyone to a fault, and it can get them in a lot of trouble. They talk a lot. They exaggerate the facts. They're impulsive decision makers, and unlike the lion, it can get them in trouble because they tend to not count the cost. It's whatever I think or feel right now. Okay, sure. So they also tend to overcommit. They're people who are involved in a lot of things, and they are notorious for not finishing the job well. They start strong, but they don't finish strong. It's something you really need to work on if you have an odd child. Help them work on, I should say. They typically process by talking, even if it's just out loud to themselves. I was in the grocery store very late at night one time in the cereal aisle. I was talking to the boxes. And a guy walked by and he goes, "Do you always talk to cereal boxes?" I turned around and I go, "Actually, I do." You know, you just always a dialogue. And if, you know, there's nobody there to listen, they just keep talking. They're happy 99% of the time. They're wired optimistically. But they're also emotionally driven. So until the Holy Spirit tempers their personality, especially if a female otter, they really can be on an emotional roller coaster. I mean, males can too, but especially a female otter. Tips for balancing their personality: help them recognize their difficulty in completing tasks and work towards completion. They are so easily distracted, have lots of interests, like everybody. Everybody's a friend, so I just move on to the next thing. And who cares if the last thing didn't get finished? You need to call their attention to that. That's not a good trait. That's not a helpful trait for them as they go into adulthood. Realize their desire and need for variety and flexibility. They are very easily bored. Otters do well in a profession like teaching or ministry that's different every single day. They really do need that. When I worked for the county tax assessor, when I told my dad I'm not going to college, he goes, "Okay, we'll get you a 40-hour week job for the county tax assessor." Ken Coons called him, "Get my daughter a job." I thought I was going to go out of my mind. Every day, sitting at the same desk, filing, and I would fall asleep on my desk. So I went home after, I don't even think it was 2 weeks. I said, "Okay, I'm going back to school now. I'm going to quit my job this week." He goes, "Oh, no, no, you'll quit your job in December." That was one of the best things my father ever did for me. And I thought, I've got to get a job that's different all the time and has a lot of people. You know, I just about went out crazy. So help them see those things. It's really helpful if you can see things and talk to them. You know, not necessarily as the expert, but this is something I see in you. Does that ring true for you? And it really can be extremely helpful for them. Don't take on more. Help them not to take on more than they can handle. They do need to learn to say no. But they will be frustrated if you're the kind of mom that says no because you can't take on a lot. Those little otter sons and daughters who are raised by a mommy who might be one of these that has to really limit themselves, you can frustrate them very, very, very much. Help them learn to be more intentional about being on time. You can try telling him it's rude. It probably won't resonate. Ask me how I know. But I have learned over the years the importance of it and that it frustrates people. One of them was my youngest child, who I picked up late once, and he got in the car and never complained and said, looking straight forward with his teeth gritted, "Don't ever be late for me again." That makes these guys a little crazy. And so you're having fun, you're really ticking them off. You know, you gotta think through those dynamics. Recognize their need to stay consistent in reading and studying the Word of God so that they can live by truth and not be controlled by circumstances or their emotions. Of all the personalities, this is the most emotionally controlled, circumstantially controlled. And I'm telling you, as a 54-year-old who's worked very hard to let the Holy Spirit temper my personality. You really can learn to become a steady person. I really, really very much am. And I'm so incredibly emotionally driven for so many years. Help them work towards that. It will be in their favor. Help them seek out friends who enjoy having a good time, love to laugh and do crazy things, even if you don't. That's important to them. Becky Martin's Maddie is an otter, and every now and then, there's a few people who will call me and say, okay, explain this to me. And I just say, you know what, she just really wants to have a really good time. I know you don't need to be silly like that. She really, 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 really needs that. So, you know, talk to your friend who's like your kid and find out some of those things. It can be really beneficial for both of you. And it helps, just helps you to understand. Like she'll say, that helps me so much. I just, to me, it just seemed, I don't know what, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but you know, it just seemed unnecessary. I'm like, oh no, it's very necessary for how she's wired. Take time to think, help them take time to think about a decision, even buying something small. I learned this very well from my husband. You know what, Sherilyn? Sleep on it. You can buy it tomorrow. Even a little otter who got a dollar from Grammy and wants to go spend it, just encourage them to sleep on it one night. Because they are such impulsive decision makers, and it can get them in a lot of trouble. Parenting an otter. You will need the power of the Holy Spirit to temper their emotions. Yeah, that's up there. I don't need to read that to you. I'm sorry. Because of them being so emotionally driven. But they're also hypersensitive, so you have to be careful about how you explain those things. First one, encourage and require them to complete things they start. They tend to either be competitive, and if they're not competitive, I was not at all, they love to have fun. So if you can turn something into a game or a race, it really, really helps them. My otter, I think Ben's a lion otter. It used to help him so much when I would just come help him clean his room. He just couldn't quite get his mind around it somehow. And I'd say, okay, I'm going to turn on the clock, you know, and do this quickly and kind of help them go. Where Andy just naturally could organize his room and clean up and knew what to do. He just had a harder time doing that. So make it fun. Make anything fun and you get a lot out of your otter. Accept their sheer joy in performing and making others happy. Most often it really is not prideful. And that's a mistake I see a lot of parents make. They think because a kid wants to be up front that it's a bad thing. I say to people every now and then, you better get that kid on the stage. I mean, Parker Kingship, he belongs on the stage. That's not a bad thing. They're wired that way for something that God has planned for them to do. So encourage that. Number three, help them to not commit or offer to do more than they can realistically get done. They're typically high energy kind of kiddos, and it can be their downfall because they just think they can do everything. And truly, the world is their friend, and every person is a potential new best friend. I mean, these guys have a few friends. That's fine, but you know, I got things to do. There, you can't have enough friends, and every person is your best friend, at least whoever you're with. They really, truly are like that. And it's not because they're fickle. They just are so in the moment, and they love people. Somebody said one time, Abby knows I don't do crafts, and I don't have hobbies and all that stuff. They're like, what's your hobby? I said, honestly, just being with people, laughing, talking, just it's just my hobby. That's what I like to do. I used to go to a craft thing with all these girls and when we were young moms, and this older woman who's sadly her husband had left her, and she took her lemons and made lemonade. It was wonderful. She'd have us all over to her house, and the big joke was, Sherilyn will come and entertain us while we all do crafts. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to enjoy all of you, you know? I mean, really, that's how they think. That's how they're wired. That's their need. Teach them, number four, teach them the importance of being on time, but then don't expect them to be. I mean, yes, but don't. You know what I mean? Be realistic about it because it is hard for them. They get very easily distracted. And five, praise, praise, praise. They crave verbal affirmation typically. But let me caution you to inspect what you expect of them. Because they are notorious for trying to get by, slide by. They're the kind of kid they're going to stuff the stuff under the bed and kind of hope you don't find it. So inspect what you expect so that your praise is sincere and doesn't become a little more frivolous. Number six, understand they tend to be highly circumstantial, controlled by their circumstances and emotions. And help them to let the Holy Spirit temper those. Their life view is fun. Fun, whatever it takes. Affirm an otter in the following ways. Laugh at them and with them. They love that. Laugh at them and with them. Tell them when they make you or others happy. They really do want to make others happy. That fills them up. Affirm them for something well done in front of others. Because see, relationships are so important to them. And when you say in front of somebody else, they will probably poo-poo it because they're big actresses and actors. They probably will, oh, no, not really. But it really does fill them up. Recognize that words are life to them. Positive words are life to them. So what does that mean about negative words? Really powerful. Really, really powerful. Words can really hurt an otter. A lion is going to let words roll off his back because he's going to roar right back at you and tell you you're stupid, probably. A golden retriever might get hurt, but easygoing. It's not going to, I mean, words, of course, hurt everyone, but you know what I mean. A beaver is going to think about your words for 2 years and analyze them and talk about them and go over them. An otter is just going to crush them. They probably aren't going to tell you or anybody. It's just going to hurt. Just hurts. Because words are really important. Listen to them and their stories. Dave used to come out of Ben's room sometimes at night. We always laid with our kids for years and years and years. And shut the door and say, you got to go in. I can't listen anymore. Just talk, you know. Listen, really important to them. And then appreciate or notice their enthusiasm for everything. That really is a gift. You know, when somebody's enthusiastic about things, and sometimes they can get criticized for that. An otter can be criticized for a lot, and it can be very hurtful to them. Golden retriever. Gary Smalley says, every family should be so lucky to have at least one golden retriever in it. They really are such an easy personality. They're an introvert. Now, that doesn't mean no people. It just means less people because they are people-focused, but they are an introvert. They are typically drained by a lot of people. Ben's dream was to invite the entire high school to our house for a birthday party. And when he was in eighth grade, we let him invite a lot of kids, like 30 or something. And we just have, you know, a normal house. And afterwards, Andy would have been fourth grade. And he came to Dave and I and very quietly said, you know that party Ben had on Friday? I don't ever want to have one of those. That's all he said. There were just kids everywhere and noise everywhere and food everywhere. And we found him up in his room with his little buddy, you know, that he'd invited over. So he, now, Andy has really close, meaningful relationships. Not so much this one. A few, but you know, you could be my friend today. Really close, meaningful relationships. So it's not no people, it's just a lot of people. Okay, they're energized by meaningful relationships. They're the kind of person that has, the golden retriever has really close friends, and they are loyal. Their nickname is the watcher. They are happy to watch. I had a very dear golden retriever friend who used to say, I knew if I waited long enough, Cheryl would make the decision, and I was thrilled with that. They don't really want to make the decision. The S's from the DIS personality for the golden retriever is stable, steady, and supportive. They are just by nature easygoing. They don't have a strong opinion. I brought Andy to tears once trying to get him to tell me what he thought. We were on vacation, and I thought for sure I have an opinion about everything. Lions do, and otters usually do. And Dave finally was like standing behind him, stop. And he started to cry. I don't know. He didn't have an opinion. They don't. It doesn't make them boring. They're just easy going. It's fine. If you want to do that, go ahead. Picking my boys going to get their tuxes. Oh, my gosh. Ben had a plan for 2 years. It was very flashy. Pinstripes and fuchsia vest and, you know, the whole nine yards, and couldn't wait to go get it. I had to call the girl that Andy was taking and say, all right, what color is your dress? What kind of tux do you want? He's like, do you like that? Do you think she'll like that? I don't care. He didn't care. I could have said, get the green. Well, it couldn't be flashy. We wouldn't want to call too much attention to us because the golden retriever is so much about you. That's why they're just so dear. They're so much about you. Are you okay? You know, am I making you? They don't have the need to make you happy, but they just want peace. They just want things calm. They want everybody to get along. They listen carefully to others. You have to teach them to express themselves. They always have, typically always have a best friend. They're, I already said they're drained by people, energized by those one-on-one meaningful relationships. They procrastinate in decision-making because they just hope somebody else will make it. Typically process by thinking through things alone. And they can become a doormat, so you have to watch that with kids and siblings in particular. Tips for balancing a golden retriever personality: recognize their need for direct motivation and help them learn to set goals. But you would be really different with a golden retriever helping them set goals than you would a lion or an otter. A golden retriever, you first encourage them that they can set goals, that they need to, that you love them as they are. Then you help them set those goals. Then you revisit the goals soon and you get some kind of reward that speaks to them. Because goals can be a little bit overwhelming to a golden retriever. That feels serious. That feels unattainable. And they want to please. They want to please. So goals can be a little hard, but they do need to learn to do that. Help them put forth effort in being more enthusiastic, but don't expect a lot. They just aren't going to get all worked up about anything, positive or negative. But help them to understand that showing that kind of emotion, sometimes when someone does something nice for you or whatever, is helpful for the other person, you know, that kind of thing, within reason. Help them to assert themselves in making decisions and stick to their decision once it's made. They are so easily swayed. Andy was dating a girl a year ago, and he went and met her family, and she has these two twin sisters. I said, how'd you like the twins? He goes, oh, my gosh, Mom, they reminded me so much of me and Ben. The one told the other one what to do, and she did what he said. And they're just very, very easily swayed. And you do have to start working with them young and being their own person, because they are the kind of kiddo that could be easily swayed in a temptation kind of situation. They don't want to be different. They don't want to stick out. They don't, you know, they just kind of want to conform. So with Andy, we were constantly telling him, just be your own person. We knew to say to him, be a leader, would completely overwhelm him. Just be your own person. And he became his own person. And hair out to here and crazy clothes. But that was good, Dave said. Help them not to get in the habit of ignoring their feelings, but to speak the truth to others in a kind way. Because what happens with a golden retriever, they have like this major long fuse, but when it blows, it's not pretty. So you got to help them kind of along the way to keep talking if they will. If you've ever seen a golden retriever blow, it's rare. But it's a little scary. We did see that once in front of my whole family in California. Everybody's looking at me like, what are you going to do? Dave wasn't there yet. What are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I've never seen this. I mean, Andy just went crazy. He'd taken years of it. We used to say to Ben, one of these days, that child is going to turn on you, and you are going to have to watch out. So help them do that along the way. And help them understand you have a long fuse. So you've got to really be careful. I remember my dad talking to me about that when I asked him one time, you know, our personalities are so much the same, Daddy, and I don't want to live the regrets you've lived. Give me your best piece of advice. He said, kiddo, you have a pretty long fuse. And so say that to your kids. Be careful with that. That can cause someone to kind of go off the deep end. You don't want to do that. So watch out for that kind of thing. Help them to purposely take on new challenges, preferably with someone who can help them, something like an oral presentation, or to plan a party with a friend, or have a new friend over in their home, their environment, with you there. They need those comforts. They do not like change. They do not like a challenge. They do not want to be pushed into a challenging situation. That makes them feel so out of control and out of sorts. So work on those things in age appropriate. Intentionally offer to be responsible for things, or encourage them to do that with help, like to volunteer to help. A golden retriever is your typical person that has a lot of potential, but they will not come and tell you, oh, I could do that. I say to my husband all the time, you would be so good at leading that. Don't tell anybody. Don't go telling anybody at church. I'm not going to do, you know, you have to, somebody's got to naturally come alongside and notice and invite them in, invite them in. So you can push them a little bit to go in on their own, but they're not going to ever probably do that naturally. So you talk to them a lot about ways to, you know, invite a friend to do something or whatever. Ask the Holy Spirit, and encourage your child to do this, to help them stand up for themselves, because they tend to be such a follower. And praise them if you see them do that with a sibling or with you. The few times when Andy has done that with me, and I've said, good for you. I appreciate you disagreeing with me. Good, you know, just don't make a big fanfare about it. That they'll never do it again. You got to be, yeah, that was really nice. Inside you're going, a mother like me. Recognize their innate resistance to change and help them to try something new and uncomfortable once in a while, but be very, very, very patient with them. That's hard for them. Parenting a golden retriever, again, Gary Smalley would say, lucky you. Number one, recognize their tendency to be lazy because they are so easygoing. And again, it's like the lion. It's not coming from a heart of just being slothful. They're just easygoing. So it's, you know, if I don't get it done, or if, you know, doesn't seem like it's going to happen today, they're just pretty easy about that. So help them to understand that that can be detrimental to them. Number two, don't expect enthusiasm from them. Again, I already said that, but that's a tricky one with those golden retrievers. You just aren't going to get a lot of it. Even Ben was saying one of the things he loved about his college roommate last year who graduated, he said he was so much like Andy. And I said, what did you love? And he said, you know, you just didn't get worked up about anything like I do. And I said, what do you think that is for those golden retrievers? He said, I think that they realize this is not really worth it. And it will kind of die down. And, you know, so they just have this very soothing effect on relationships and families. But for them, they can be walked on, and you have to help them stand up for themselves. But at the same time, affirm that that's such a wonderful thing about them. Number three, require them to make some of their own choices. But remember that too many decisions in a short period of time is very overwhelming to them. Number four, be cautious that they don't get blamed for everything. They can easily become the family scapegoat because they want peace so, so badly. Under stress, we learned that Dave, me, and Ben all become high Ds. And we used to find our little, or high lion, and we used to find our little golden retriever under his bed. I'm stupid. You know, he'd blame himself. And we had to really get a grip on that because we were pretty, the three of us were kind of comfortable with the conflict, and he was so uncomfortable with it. So pay attention to those kinds of things. Not proud of that at all. Number five, help them to express themselves to others and tell them what to say or what to do. We did this so much with Andy, particularly as he began to go into middle school and high school. His dad would talk to him a lot about, you know, let's say you get to this party and everybody decides they're going to start drinking and, you know, whatever. And he would give them all, he would constantly give him things to do. Number six, encourage but don't force them to take on responsibility. But you want them to take some so they can get a sense of success with it. You know, a school project or helping out at church or maybe entering into a talent show with a friend. They're not going to do that by themselves. Their life view is peace. They just need peace so badly. And they can't take on too much. I don't remember how old Andy was. I was trying so hard to think of today, but he was in Scouts. He was taking piano lessons, and he was playing baseball. And he came to us very tearfully and said, my life is so overwhelming. And it just was too much. These kiddos, peace is really important. So if you're a mom who can really do lots of all these organized things, some of these organized sports and stuff, get some of us older moms a little worried because not all kids can handle that. And so we said, okay, what do you decide? What do you want to drop? He first dropped Scouts. That was okay. Then he dropped piano. We were heartbroken. But he just did sports for a while. And every year we'd say, take piano again whenever you're ready, whenever you're ready. Freshman in high school, I'm ready. Found a teacher. You know, so they really have to do it on their own pace. The more you push, the more they're just going to recede into themselves. And especially a strong mom personality or dad personality. How do we affirm a golden retriever? Simple tokens of genuine appreciation go such a long way for them. A smile, a wink, a pat on the back, a hug, a verbal or written thank you go a very, very long way for them. They're just so dear. Recognize their need. This is, again, kind of what I just said about Andy saying, I'm overwhelmed. My life is overwhelming. Recognize their need for downtime. They need it to re-energize. It doesn't necessarily even have to be alone time, but some downtime where things aren't scheduled for them. They're not the kind of kid that can be pushed all the time. Notice and appreciate their kind and helpful ways and say so. And then respect their reluctance to do something new and praise them when they do. Not, now, unlike the otter, you would want to praise them in front of other people, not the golden retriever. That would embarrass them. Maybe in front of a significant person, a special grandma or dad, or at the dinner table, a special plate, but not just openly in front of a chit-chatting spontaneous group. Embarrassing. They don't want the attention on them. Golden retrievers in the room, is that true? Isn't that true? They really, please don't put the attention on me. That is awful for me. You have a question? Sure, did I go over them too quickly? Notice and appreciate their kind and helpful ways and say so. And then respect their reluctance to do something new, but praise them when they do. You know, if you're like an otter or a lion, and like I am, and new is so energizing to me, I could really push my golden retriever to the point of retreat that he wouldn't come out again. You know what I mean? So respect that reluctance and let that be okay. And he doesn't have to, or she doesn't have to keep up with the siblings. You know, Ben always had tons going on, but it didn't work for him for, you know, a certain season of his life. Okay, beaver personality. I love the little beaver. But he's so cute in this book. It is a male. He's got his little tape measure and his map. And, oh, he's just, the beaver personality is an introvert and task focus. They are energized by doing things right. That is so important to them. And again, it's not no people, it's less people. However, of all the personalities, the beaver is the one who needs alone time to re-energize. And if you live with one, you need to respect that. That's a hard thing for those of us who don't need that. Their nickname is the thinker. They need time to process. Their characteristics, according to the DISC, the C words, are careful, conscientious, correct. I would add creative. This is truly one of the most creative personalities, but they are the first one to deny it, to not recognize it, to not be willing to admit it. Isn't it true if you know a beaver or you are a beaver? They are just so hard on themselves. The beaver sees life through perfect eyes, and they think life should be perfect. So they are very hard on themselves, and sometimes, not always, hard on other people. It kind of depends. Like Becky Martin, those of you who know her well, I could say this. She has a lot of beaver, but she has tons of golden retrievers. So she's not, I mean, she's hard on people, but not in a harsh way. A true beaver off the charts, so hard on themselves and so hard on everybody else. They want so bad for life to be perfect, and what do we know? It's not. They're dedicated. They desire to be helpful and prove their worth. They don't want to be on a team unless they're going to be able to contribute. They pursue excellence naturally. And they are typically very neat and tidy. They notice every detail, sometimes to a fault. But they are really, really good admin assistants. They're just just admin people because they pay. They're the kind that love spreadsheets and all those kind of people that I'm so not. I need them so bad. I have to be surrounded by beavers because they just see life in a way I don't see it. But they just notice all the details. They're the kind of person that remembers 6 years ago when they met you what you were wearing. And you're like, what? Yeah, you know that green, you know, you don't even remember, you don't even have it anymore. You don't know what they're talking about. And they remember those kind of details. They have a really high need to ask a lot of questions because they need facts and details to process through to make their decisions. They are drained by people for sure. They agonize over their decisions because they want it to be right so bad. They can ask questions to the point of making you crazy. If you have a beaver child as a parent, they can make you a little crazy. They have such a hard time making a decision. Typically, they need to process by asking questions and then making lists. They love their list. They love to check off their list, cross off their list. They also, I've noticed, are pretty typically intuitive about others and situations. So pay attention to the kinds of things they sense. I don't know how that would fit into Myers-Briggs with the sensing and intuitive thing, but this personality tends to know things intuitively about people. Very, very interesting. Pay attention to that. And they will smell a person who's insincere. They will smell if your words are saying, you know, trying to say nice things, but everything about your demeanor and your face is not. They will pick that up like that. So tips for balancing the beaver personality. Help them understand that they're highly sensitive and hurt easily, and so purpose not to take everything personally. Really, of all the personalities, they will take everything personally. If I go over tonight and I say, I'm really sorry, I wish I hadn't gone over, we kind of got started late, they will immediately begin to think, did I come in late? Did I cause her to start? They really, very introspective. Help them to work on that just because it begins to be an enemy of theirs instead of their friend. There's obviously a good side to that, but help them to work at not having a pessimistic outlook and attitude. And I think that's because, I don't think they're wired pessimistically. I think it goes back to that wanting things to be done well and having this perfection bent. And so when it doesn't, they're often disappointed, not only in themselves, but in other people. Many beavers I know live in their head. My one beaver friend, her counselor said, no one can read your mind. That's why you're frustrated and having so much conflict, because you think everybody knows what you're thinking. Nobody knows what you're thinking. You've got to say it. Say it. Help them to learn to deal with disappointment and failure by not expecting perfection out of themselves, others, or circumstances. The lion needs to learn that life is not fair. The beaver needs to learn that life is so far from perfect and that no person is perfect, and it's perfectly okay. Help them change their self-talk and learn to say what is true, not what they think or feel. They are emotionally driven. They tend to be a very moody personality very often. And they are emotionally driven, but they also live in their mind so much that they take very seriously what they think and make it a reality a lot of times. Help them understand that although they are quiet and shy by nature, they do need to learn good conversation and social skills. I have two beavers in my household. It's their subdominant part, but I'm often saying to them, but you need to take a little bit of responsibility for the conversation. They can tend to sit back and wait for the other person to do that. Help them to intentionally be spontaneous once in a while. A beaver is, I'm going to bring this into the adult world, but this is one of your friends that you call and you say, you know what, it's a Saturday, let's just run over to Belleville for a couple of hours. And they're like, oh, I can't. Why? Well, I got too much to do. Well, see, they've made a to-do list in the morning. They've only gotten through two and there's 10. So they can't possibly stop and leave their to-do list. Right. It's painful, right? Right? I know some of you, yeah, it's really painful for them. So as a child, if you're raising a beaver, encourage them once in a while to be spontaneous and let that be okay. You know, within reason, that might make them crazy too often. Help them try new situations or new things and go into new situations. It's very scary for them. Because, see, they want to do everything right. And you will never get a beaver to do anything if they don't know what the expectations are. When I hire Kids Connection directors like Barb Newhart, who has got a lot of Beaver in her, they have to have their ministry description first. They have to, I've got to have a lot of conversation. They have to know, here is what I'm going to expect. You know why? Because they want to prove their value. And they don't want to say yes to you. You know, these two are going to say, I can do it. And this one's like, I don't care. If I disappoint you, we'll have a grand old time doing it. You know, this one's probably not going to commit. So, you know, it's just hard to commit. But the Beaver's like, I want to commit to you. They are the amazing employees and volunteers. Amazing. Because they're not going to commit unless they can commit. And then when somebody like Barb does, or the latest girl that we hired for the table, Sarah, also, she's a lot of D, but D can, the lion and beaver can look the same in some of this stuff. The lion just has a lot more boldness. They have a lot more insecurity. But they can look the same. And once those people commit, they are in 110%. Really, they are just such a gifted, skillful, creative personality, and they're their own worst enemy, sadly. They just cut themselves short all the time, and are self-critical. Help them to give themselves extra time to accomplish things. Being or feeling rushed frustrates a beaver, and if it goes on too long, they will have this underlying anger toward the person who makes them feel rushed. Really hard for a beaver child to stop in the middle of something and have to go, where an otter lion parent might say, come on, come on, you can finish you can finish that later, come on, come on, come on. And that beaver child is just melting inside, because right now I'm coloring this picture and I need to finish it. So be sensitive to those things. Parenting a beaver, I'm almost done, guys. You're listening well. We are really moving along here. Number one, understand that they're highly sensitive and they do get their feelings hurt very easily. So you have to use a lot of language of, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I really didn't, honey. I'm so sorry. Will you please forgive me? And then go on and talk about it, because they get hurt easily. Number two, encourage them to see the bright side, as they are typically programmed with a negative outlook. The otter's glass is always half full. The beaver's glass is always half empty. And something bad could happen soon. They're just kind of wired that way, because they want their world to be perfect. Number three, help them learn to handle disappointment and failure without letting it affect them in a profound way. Because they are self-critical and because they want their world to be perfect, they can beat themselves up so badly. So have that, but they do like to talk through, they're introspective, but they do like to talk through those things far more than a golden retriever. They don't want to talk about it, but the beaver does want to talk about it, and they can come to a better conclusion. So nighttime, bedtime is a great time to sit and talk with a beaver when everything's peaceful and calm. Help them learn to handle disappointment and, oh, I already did that one, sorry. Number four, give them time to do things. Again, rushing them frustrates them and makes them feel very insecure. Value a job well done, especially one that they've done on their own, and tell them how amazing that is, how proud you are. Number five, accept that they often have a need for quiet, so provide it for them. Particularly an otter parent can run a lively household 24/7. And that beaver needs to, or a beaver spouse or something, needs to get away. And that quiet re-energizes them, that alone and quiet. And help them understand that about themselves. You know, graduation time, we went to a lot of parties. And I'll never forget at Ben's, I think it was like the 7th or 8th party. And Dave looked at me and he just looked glazed over, and I said, you can't do one more party, can you? He said, I can't do one. I was just getting rolling. I was like, oh, man, I wish there were 8 more, you know? And he said, I don't think I can do one more. We'd saved really close friends then. I said, honey, can you hang in there for 15 minutes? We'll just go in the backyard, get a little something, we just can drop off the gift. It took a lot in him. And then he had to go and be alone for a while. He was done. You do know, probably, people are either drained or energized by people, right? And if you are drained by people, you only can energize by getting away from them. So give them space to do that. and help children understand that. Number six, try to keep a reasonable family schedule. They crave security, the security of a routine. They need to enjoy spontaneity, but they need a routine. Right, beavers in the room? You need a routine. That you, it's really hard for you to function for long without a routine. So this kind of mom or this kind of mom is hard on a beaver because this one's just so, oh, whatever. And this one's, wah! They just wear them out. First thing in the morning, wah! Makes them a little crazy. They really need a routine. Life view for the beaver is rules. There are rules to be followed, and I want to follow them. Many more personal stories, but we need to press on. Okay, affirm your beaver, and then we'll field a couple questions, but if you need to leave, you can leave. It's almost 8:40. It's about 8:38. Affirm your beaver. Pray for them and tell them so. Sincere care and concern go a very long way for a beaver, and they know if you are sincere or not. Sincere. Did I say that right? Respect and answer their many questions. Respect and answer their many questions. If you need to, divide it in half. Say, we'll finish this later. One of my best friends growing up from the time I was little was a beaver person. I used to say, oh, Anna, banana, I don't know. You ask questions like, why is the sky blue? I don't know. Who cares? Stop. And she just made me crazy. And we still laugh about it today. But really, they're always processing. Give them time to process. Perfect timing for that. Don't expect them, like the lion or the otter, to give you a quick answer. They're not going to probably be able to do that without going a little nutty. And then acknowledge their needs and their respect, and respect their need for routine. Acknowledge their needs. They're really in tune to who they are because they're so introspective. And so when they have needs, acknowledge that, affirm that, let them know that you notice that. And again, respecting their need for a routine. Openly appreciate their precision and excellence in everything they do. I think a beaver probably would rather have that in private than openly. Is that true, beavers? Probably, yeah. I know, probably poor Barb, I already brought her up to everyone, yeah. And they'd probably prefer it in a card or a one-on-one conversation or not. The golden retrievers just, you know, keep everything the same, don't notice me. But the beaver really is kind of shy. They're really kind of shy by nature, isn't that true? Those of you who are, a little bit? Yeah, so don't call attention to me. That's just uncomfortable for me. Go ahead and call attention to you. I'd just rather watch you get the attention kind of thing. And then lastly, recognize their need to see a job to completion and give them time to do so. And affirm that and tell them, you know what? The common start strong. The uncommon finish strong. Beavers are great at completing a task. When I talk about them being good employees or volunteers, when they are going to leave a place, you know, when they resign or something, you know, a lot of people, when they resign, they're gone. A beaver is going to finish not only to the last day but beyond. I always tell Kate all the time, she's got more beaver in her than she could possibly realize. But here she is sending out emails this afternoon and away with her husband. I wrote back, I said, you are one of the most wonderfully dependable people I know. They are just delightful. And that's the bottom line thing, and I'm done. All of them are delightful. Some of them get a bad rap for certain things. But if we can normalize the differences between us and accept who we are, makes a big difference. So it is now 8:42. And if you need to leave, you will. It's impossible to offend me, so feel free to scoot right out.